Welcome to Leadership Lessons. I'm Todd Gray, the Executive Director for the Kentucky Baptist Convention. Leadership Lessons is a program where we talk to faithful leaders who are making an impact for the gospel. My guest today is Jason Lowe, and we're going to talk about training up preachers in Kentucky. Jason, thank you for joining Leadership Lessons.
Thank you, Dr. Gray. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let me tell you about Jason. Jason serves as the East Regional Consultant for the Kentucky Baptist Convention. Prior to coming into that role, he served as the Associational Mission Strategist for the Pike Association of Southern Baptists, as well as various pastoral roles in three Kentucky Baptist churches. In fact, Jason, I had breakfast this morning with one of your former colleagues, Stephen Kavnis. You all work together. Jason is the author of The Church During the Search, a book designed to help church members honor the Lord while they wait for their next pastor. He also writes regularly on his blog, jasonalowe.com, to equip churches and encourage church leaders. Jason's married to Brandy. They have two sons, Isaiah and Noah. So, Jason, let's jump right into these questions. Tell us about how you came to know the Lord and how you sensed a calling into ministry.
Sure. I was raised in a Christian home, but it was a home that was faithful to go to church each and every Sunday. But it was a denomination where there wasn't a lot for children, so there was no Sunday school, anything like that. And so as I got older, I didn't really have a lot to do with church and even quit going until I got to college. And when I was in college at Eastern Kentucky University, the Lord just placed a lot of different people in my life who shared the gospel with me. And eventually my senior year gave my life to the Lord and was saved. And so that was an exciting time. And then came back home to Pike County. I'm originally from Pike County. And so came back here and joined First Baptist Church of Pikeville, was baptized by Paul Badgett, who was my pastor, who was also my predecessor in this role with KBC. So saved about 26 years ago now.
Yeah. So Pike County, for folks that don't know, is one of the largest, geographically largest county. Mm-hmm. In the state. It's the far east end. So if you're looking at the tip of Kentucky, as it juts out toward the east, that includes Pike County. That's your neck of the woods. It's Appalachia, beautiful part of the state. So Jason, as you were getting ready for ministry leadership and preparing, what training did you find most personally helpful to you? And so when you look back on all the training you've had, whether it was just by an example of someone like Brother Paul, or whether it was formal training, what has served you best?
Yeah, and I've had both. I've had the formal training in seminary, but I believe that the best I ever had was just sitting down one-on-one with pastoral mentors, Brother Paul Badgett being one of them. Not long after I expressed a call to ministry, he and I had a 3.5-hour car ride to Louisville to look around seminary down there, and so I just peppered him with questions for 3.5 hours on the way down and 3.5 hours on the way back, and wow, just a lot of other conversations. Just he just invested in me so much. And then another pastor, once I moved to Louisville to go to seminary, we joined Highland Park First Baptist Church there in J-Town, and Jeff Pennington was the pastor there, and he certainly was a huge mentor to me in those early days of ministry. Having those one-on-one relationships, I learned a lot in the classroom, but there's nothing like having those mentors.
It's not an either or, is it? It's a both and. And you think about Jesus' ministry. Jesus, he spoke to the masses, but then he trained the smaller group. Then it seems like he invested more in Peter and James and John. And I just know from my experience that the smaller the group, the greater the impact. Mm-hmm. And both are important. The classroom time is important, but also that one-to-one with mentors. Jason, I mentioned in the introduction, you write a blog designed to help and encourage church leaders. How did that get started for you?
Yeah, so that probably started, I think, in 2015. As you mentioned, I was serving as the Director of Missions, is the title that we went by back then, for the Pike Association, and realized I couldn't be in the churches that often and didn't have those connections. And so it really started to have a platform to kind of encourage the churches of the Pike Association to be engaged in the Great Commission, evangelism and missions. And so really kind of just had a lot of articles to encourage them. Over the years, kind of the focus of the blog changed. I did a lot of ministry research. I've got a background in statistics, and so I did a lot of research there for a while and published some studies. And then when COVID hit, a lot of articles were posted just to help churches navigate those waters. And so during that time, probably I started posting a lot more frequently, and a lot more people started visiting the site. And then after we came out of COVID, it was more ministry to pastors and helping them deal with burnout and other challenges maybe they're facing on the backside of COVID, as well as just helping kind of pastor search committees look for pastors, kind of get some tools there. So it's certainly evolved over the years, but it's been fun. I don't get to do it as much as I like, but I enjoy it.
So you're primarily responding to needs that you become aware of in your work, either as an AMS and now in the work that you're in now with KBC. What are a couple of maybe favorite posts that you've written, things that came to mind that you felt like, I need to address this through a blog post and at least get a resource out there that I could share with others? What comes to mind?
Yeah, one comes to mind right when COVID started. Nobody could make any sense of it. And this wasn't really a ministry post. This was more just for an average church member to read. But it was like five Bible verses to read when life doesn't make sense.
Oh, wow.
And over the next couple of months, I wrote several posts similar to that. Five Bible verses to read when you're dealing with temptation, anger, those types of issues. And now those are the most popular posts on the site. Some of them get several thousand views a month. So that's one. Another would be for pastor search committees, 15 initial questions to ask during that first interview.
Oh, that's great.
And that one's real practical, and that one's pretty popular, and a lot of people kind of read that one too. So those are a couple.
So you're a regional consultant for KBC. Regional consultant is kind of like the Swiss Army knife for the mission board staff. Not the little Swiss Army knife with the toothpick and the tweezers, but the big one with the spoon and the fork and all those tools. So you're responding to all kind of needs. What are some common things that you're responding to, either from leaders that you're interacting with, pastors and staff, or churches?
Yeah. One is one of the big calls I get a lot of times is when there's a transition in leadership, helping the church get from their last pastor to the next pastor in a way that honors the Lord. So I work with pastor search committees a lot. I've got two trainings lined up in the next couple of weeks with a couple of churches. Another one is just resources in general. I get a lot of calls from pastors saying, hey, I need a resource to help me revise our constitution and bylaws, or I need help. Maybe there's conflict in our church and I need some help to navigate that in a way that kind of provides good leadership. And so I'll get questions and requests like that a lot.
So as a regional consultant, you're covering a geographically large territory. There aren't the number of churches, it may not be as large as some of the other regions. What do you find most gratifying about your work? What are you enjoying most about it? Most satisfying?
Yeah, just sitting down and hearing stories from our churches. I had lunch with a pastor yesterday and he was just telling me about, they had a great Sunday. Obviously it was Easter Sunday, but he was just telling me about some of the partnerships that they have. And the way that the church has blessed him and his family. And a lot of times we'll get calls when things are going difficult for a church. But when I get a call and I get to sit down and just spend some time with a pastor like that and just rejoice with him, there's nothing quite like hearing how the Lord is moving in the local church level. And so those days are fun.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm glad you're serving churches that way. And man, you provide a third safe space for that pastor to talk to. That's a person he can bounce ideas off of or process something that he may be dealing with in the church that just needs a confidential, trustworthy, incredible listening ear, and may even want your input. So thank you for your ministry there. So these are challenging times for search committees, churches in the search. I know that the last I saw, there were about 289 churches in Kentucky looking for their next pastor. And most of those are going to be looking for a pastor for a bivocational church. There seems to be a shortage of preachers and pastors in Kentucky. So what do you think has contributed to that shortage?
There's probably a lot of reasons for that, but as I was just kind of thinking through that question, I think there's really three that come to my mind. First of all is in rural settings, and most of the churches in Kentucky are in rural settings, there's just a population decline to begin. Yeah. There's a lot of people moving out of rural areas to more populated areas, Lexington, Louisville, Bowling Green, places like that in Kentucky or even outside the state. In my region, I looked it up, they're the top 10 counties with the largest population decline over the last 4 years since 2020, all 10 of them are located in the East region, in rural areas. And
top 10 counties with largest population decline, those top 10 are in the East Kentucky region.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's one factor. I think a related factor, as you mentioned, is because there's not as much population, because some of our churches have struggled over the years, we are seeing a rise in the number of bivocational pastors. Mm-hmm. And so it's difficult for churches sometimes, especially in rural areas, to find qualified bivocational pastors. And so I know a church that it took them 5 years to find a pastor. They didn't have a parsonage. It was an area that was pretty remote. And so it was a huge challenge for them. But I think probably the primary reason is pastors are busy and they've got a lot on their plate. And so I just don't think that a lot of pastors in recent years have been very intentional in kind of calling out the next generation and mentoring them and equipping them. They've just got so many other things they've been dealing with that it just hasn't been the highest priority for them.
Jason, I think that's an interesting point. And I'd love to see research, and you know, maybe this is something Lifeway could do, or you might lead out in it with your background in statistics, to, in a non-judgmental way, asking church leaders, how often do you extend an invitation to those who are being called to ministry? How often is that part of your Sunday morning, you know, preaching and your conversation about answering the call? Because in the church I came out of in Indianapolis, I think it was every week. I think Bob Latham mentioned that every week. And when he retired, there were 40 something people who'd surrendered to ministry under his ministry. And they were serving all over the country at that time. I'm not sure. And that's not a judgmental statement. I'm just not sure. As you said, folks are busy. A lot's on people's minds. Do you have any observations about how that call is extended from pastors?
Yeah, I would say in a lot of churches that I visit, currently doing interim, so I'm not visiting as much, but when I'm in worship services, it's rare that I hear that part of the invitation. But then I know some brothers, some pastors that, much like you said, they've got multiple men that they're mentoring. I think of a Seth Carter at First Baptist Paintsville.
Yeah, that's right.
That takes six or seven everywhere he goes with him. When I schedule to have lunch with him, he brings five guys with him.
That's right. It's going to be a family gathering. Yeah.
That's right. And so I think part of it is that it's just a lack of intentionality, or to say it more positively, it's those that understand the need and are very proactive to go after it. And I know several pastors that fall into that category.
Yeah. And so for me, you know, I think I wasn't aware of the emptiness of the pipeline in the state. When I became aware of it, I started adding it to when I'm preaching somewhere, just making it part of an invitation. It could be that God's calling you into gospel ministry. We'd love to talk with you about that calling. So Jason, how do you think we begin to address the problem of this, what feels like an empty pipeline, that seems like the need for pastors is greater than the supply of qualified men who can go pastor churches? How do we begin to start addressing that in the state? This is something that's going to take all of us working together, right? It's not something the KBC is going to do, or just a single local church is going to do. That's why we cooperate as Baptist churches, is to address issues like this. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And first, I would say that this is not a new problem unique to Kentucky. This is a problem that goes back all the way back to the first century and the New Testament. If you look at Matthew chapter 9, towards the end of the chapter there, Jesus has been busy doing ministry. He's been preaching the Sermon on the Mount, and then he's been healing and walking on he's calming storms, things like that. And then at the end of Matthew chapter 9, he looks out at all the crowds who are still coming around him, and he has compassion on them because they're like sheep without a shepherd. And that's when he says, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. And so up until that point in Matthew's gospel, Jesus is the only one doing any ministry. Everybody else, all the disciples, they've been spectators, they've been following him, but they haven't been engaged in the ministry. But that changes right there at the end of Matthew chapter 9. When he says, pray to the Lord of the harvest, the very next thing he does at the beginning of chapter 10 is he chooses the 12 and he sends them out.
Well, that's interesting.
And so this is not a new problem, but I think there's a huge need in our state to raise the awareness. And I think we've been doing that. And I've been so thankful for the calling out the call to emphasis that we've had for the past few years. But the reality is in these rural settings and these bivocational settings, people are not going to uproot their families and relocate if they don't have another source of income to provide for their families. So they're not moving to these areas to serve. So that means if those churches are going to find pastors, it's because those men are already sitting in the pews of our churches in those areas. And it's just a matter of pastors understanding that and being intentional and issuing those invitations, looking for guys that they sense maybe God's working on their heart, and invest in them, spend time with them, mentor them, and ultimately give them opportunities to preach and minister. So again, this is not a new problem, but it is certainly a problem that my heart's desire, as you kind of said it, my heart's desire is that the supply of God-called preachers is greater than the demand in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen. And I love the text you referenced in Matthew 9. Jesus said, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would send forth laborers into his harvest. That's something every Kentucky Baptist church could do. If every church was praying together and saying, you know, there are 300 churches in our state right now without their next pastor, let's commit to praying for those churches that God will raise up those leaders and fill those pulpits. Mm-hmm. Well, so one thing you've done to address this problem is with your team, you've worked on a resource called the Practical Preaching Workbook. You've also led a series of workshops across the state, which have been hugely successful. You had more than 265 men or 250 or 60 men who attended those workshops wanting to take their next steps in either training someone to preach or learning how to preach themselves. What are you trying to accomplish in the things that you're, I mean, you already said your desire, and maybe that's it. You want to add to it?
Yeah, I think just to kind of reiterate what we've said is that's our desire, is to have a greater supply than demand. But in order to do that, we've got to give them the tools that they need to be able to preach a biblical expository sermon. And so that's really what the goal was behind this handbook and the workshops, was to provide a resource, a simple resource, to help guys who are not going to get any formal training, may not be able to go to Clear Creek or seminary, but still need to know how to develop a sermon and preach a sermon. And so this resource walks you through 8 simple steps to get from text to sermon. The first 4 are focused on the text, and it's praying through the text, meditating on the text, interpreting the text, and then outlining the text. And then the last 4 steps are on the sermon side, and that's building the sermon. It's then kind of revising the sermon, preaching the sermon, and then reviewing it after you've actually done it. How can I get better? And what do I need to improve next time that I have the opportunity to preach? And so our goal there is just to provide a resource, a written resource, as well as the workshops were recorded and they're on our KBC website, and folks can go there and review those training opportunities. But that's just the desire, to see the supply greater than the demand.
Jason, if a pastor, you know, like you mentioned, Seth Carter, wanted to use that tool to train some men in his church, or an AMS, which is the role you were in, wanted to start a workshop of his own, how would they get that resource? And then also the other side is, what could a workshop like that look like? How often might they meet? What would they do when they meet? Walk through that a little bit for us.
Yeah, for a pastor, just contact your regional consultant. There's six of us across the state, and we've got plenty of copies of the resource, and we can get those to you. As far as a workshop, what it looks like, it could be a lot of different scenarios. It could be a one-night workshop, much like I led across the state, where you just take a couple hours, walk through the resource, or it could be a little more ongoing. That you could do it for once a month for 8 months, and take one meeting and go through each of those eight steps, and work through the resource, and then use it after you've done that. Then you could have guys practice sermons in a safe environment where they can get feedback, and all of that can happen in a local church setting. An association could do something like that. There's a lot of different ways that you could use this resource, but it's designed in such a way that it's simple and can be reproducible at the local church level, however they need to use it to train guys to preach.
So let me take you a little further on that, what a model could look like. So you did this kind of work as an AMS. If you were an AMS today and associational mission strategist in an association, and someone put this resource in your hand, or you're trying to address this need, what would you do? How what do you think would be an effective approach to training some men to preach? How would you get the word out? How would you kind of walk through that?
Yeah, we did something like this in the Pike Association prior to my time with KBC. We had a preaching class that
Okay.
met for 2 hours once a month, and honestly, a lot of that material is I used it to develop this resource. And so I would walk through, let everybody know about it, let pastors know about it, tell them to come with guys that are in their church, so that after we've talked about it, after we've had a class on it, then they can go back and they can talk about it in further detail. If there's questions that they have, they can ask their pastor and really work it out. And that's where the mentoring kind of comes into play. And so I would encourage both pastors and those sensing a call to ministry to come to this.
Yeah. So, from your perspective, what makes for a good preacher? If a guy is faithful to deliver God's word and he's a good preacher, what are some traits that are true in his life?
Well, number one, I think he needs to meet the biblical qualifications. And those are character qualifications that Paul talks about in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and also in Titus. So you got to meet those qualifications. So that's first and foremost. But after that, as far as just some of the things that I think of good preachers, number one, they understand the text, so they're properly interpreting the text. We're called to preach the word, not our own opinions, and so we've got to understand the text, and then we've got to be able to communicate that meaning to our hearers. And then the other part of that is we've also got to provide some relevant applications. What does this mean to my life? What how should my life change as a result of this text? So three questions that I would say a preacher wants to answer is, number one, what does the text say? Number two, what does the text mean? Number three, how does this text apply to people's lives? And if he can cover all three of those in a sermon, that's going to be a pretty good sermon.
Yeah. So, Jason, pastoring is obviously more than just preaching. Preaching, it's not just preaching. It's a primary task of the preacher. What are some of the things that a preacher has to figure out how to do in time? If a guy's just getting started, maybe he's learned how to preach sermons and he gets started, and a church says, "Hey, we want you to be our pastor." What are some things he's going to have to figure out pretty quickly once he's in that role?
I say a lot of times there's a big difference between a preacher and a pastor, and guys have to find it out sometimes pretty quickly. But if you look up the word pastor in the New Testament, most English translations, you won't find it very often. You'll find it sometimes in Ephesians chapter 4, where God gave pastors and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry. But every other time you find that word in the New Testament, it's not translated as pastor, it's translated as shepherd, because that's what a pastor is truly, is a shepherd of God's people. So I think there's four biblical roles of a shepherd or of a pastor. One of them, obviously, and primary, is feeding the flock from the word of God. But then another one is leading the flock. And so you're going to have to learn how to lead and make decisions. You're going to have to set the example, a godly example for your people. And so you're going to have to learn how to lead. Another role is to protect the flock. So so you're going to have to learn how to protect the flock from false teaching, from sin, and from division. And those are three primary dangers in a local church setting that a pastor certainly needs to learn how to navigate that. And then the final role of a shepherd, I think, is to comfort the flock. And so you've got to love on your people. You've got to learn how to have one-on-one conversations with them. You got to learn how to go to make hospital visits and homebound visits and all of those sorts of things. You got to be in their lives. Mark Clifton, he says it this way: you need to preach, pray, love, and stay.
That's good.
And I think that's a helpful reminder for pastors.
So Jason, pastoring a church is challenging. The demands are challenging. Add a family to that, then there's those demands are on a pastor as well. And then make it a bivocational pastor and figure he's working a job for his income, 40 to 60 hours a week, maybe. He has a church. He's responsible. There's no such thing as a part-time pastor, right? Mm-hmm. You're either a pastor or you're not. And if you are a pastor, you're all the time one. There's part-time pay in many cases for bivocational workers. And then there's a family. How do you advise a bivocational pastor, especially, to balance all of those demands on his life to be able to stay faithful long-term in ministry?
Yeah. Number one, don't pastor alone. I was reading this morning, actually, in my devotional in Exodus 18, after Moses leads the people out of Egypt, Jethro comes and he observes Moses' leadership style for a little while. And he notices that all the people come, they're standing before Moses all day long, and they're bringing all their issues to him. And he's working in all their situations. And after it's over, Jethro asks him, "Hey, what are you doing?" And Moses tells him everything, I guess thinking maybe that he's going to get a pat on the back. And Jethro says, "What you're doing is not good. You're going to wear yourself out. You're going to wear the people out. So you've got to find other godly people to help you." And so I would say to a pastor, especially in a bivocational setting, don't do ministry alone. Take guys with you, take other godly people with you whenever you're doing ministry, when you're doing hospital visits or home visits or outreach or even preparing sermons. You're training other guys on how to do this from day one. You never want to pastor alone. Number two, I would say you need to schedule downtime. For a bivocational pastor, and I was a bivocational pastor for a while, and I know what those demands are like. You've got all of your work, you've got ministry, you've got family, and then you want to have a little bit of just rest and sleep. And so what I've found is that if one of those things is going to be left off of the calendar, most of the time it's the downtime that I can have with my family. Mm-hmm. So in order to prevent that from happening, you put it on there like you would any other appointment. Maybe that's a date night with your wife, or that's a family game night, or just time to get out of the house and just rest. But put that on the calendar. Otherwise, it'll just keep getting pushed further out of your schedule. And then the last thing I would say is you've got to establish realistic expectations for yourself. A bivocational pastor is not going to have the same amount of time to prepare a sermon that a full-time pastor will be.
That's right.
You're not going to have the same amount of time to go do hospital visits and other pastoral tasks. It's just, and if you put that pressure on yourself, you're going to burn out very quickly.
Yeah.
So you just got to set realistic expectations to say, hey, it's okay. God knows what your schedule looks like. The Lord knows how long you're working. He knows all that you've got on your plate, and he can bless the amount of time that you have for ministry. And I've seen it happen many times with bivocational pastors that God has blessed the amount of time that they can focus on it.
Jason, that's great counsel. It just encourages me that you're serving Kentucky Baptist pastors and helping men who are trying to wrestle through some of those issues. So this platform is called Leadership Lessons. Last question. Tell us about an experience you had or someone that you observed that shaped your own approach to leadership or what you thought a leader should or shouldn't be?
I've had a lot of examples over the years, and one in particular just taught me that you got to be patient. I saw a brother face a situation, a pastor face a situation where my temptation would have been rushed to fix everything immediately, and to try to make things happen rather than kind of wait on the Lord, trust Him and His plan. And I watched this brother wait for 13 months on a particular outcome, and the Lord brought it to pass. Wow. And that just taught me that, hey, if it's God's will, I don't want to be passive about it, but if it's God's will, I can trust that He'll bring it about in His timing, and I don't have to try to force an issue. And if it's not God's will, no matter what I do, I'm not going to be able to make it work anyway. God doesn't always get in a hurry like we do. Yeah. And so I just learned from this brother to trust the Lord and His timing. And that has served me well, not to feel like I've got to rush from here to there or force something to happen. I can just trust the Lord knowing that He's in control and He'll work it out.
Jason, what a great reminder that regardless of whether a person has had formal leadership training or not, that there are examples all around us all the time of what to do and what not to do. Brother, I'm grateful for you. Thank you for your ministry to Kentucky Baptist and how you serve churches and church leaders and your family. And thank you for joining Leadership Lessons.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Gray. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Leadership Lessons. This program is made possible by the generous contributions by Kentucky Baptist through the Cooperative Program. For more information about the Kentucky Baptist Convention, go to kybaptist.org. And for news about how Kentucky Baptist churches are making a difference, go to kentuckytoday.com.